From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 50,000 Americans with autism turn 18 every year. What will they do as adults? Employment is a problem, but many have extraordinary skills, say the ability to concentrate for hours without losing focus or making a mistake. With more and more kids being diagnosed on the autism spectrum, it's a big deal to figure out how to tap their unique talents. This hour on Point, the story of one entrepreneur who is matching employers and workers who have the autism edge. You can join the conversation. Is this you, your child, our opportunity? How can we make it work? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now in the studio is Gareth Cook, winner of the Pulitzer Prize for Science Reporting, Explanatory at the Boston Globe. He's a columnist for the Globe. His big piece in Sunday's New York Times Magazine was The Autism Advantage, which you can read at our website, onpointradio.org. Gareth has a brother with autism. Gareth Cook, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you so much for coming in. And with us from Philadelphia is Torkel Sona, CEO and founder of Specialist Sterne, which puts people with autism to work in Denmark. He's now bringing his push to the United States. Torkel Sona, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Tom.
Gareth, let me come first to you because this is an interesting day. We've got the big DSM, the Diagnostic Scientific Manual. Is that it?
That's right. This is the manual that all psychiatrists use to diagnose disorders.
And Asperger's disorder syndrome is no longer being broken out as separate and distinct, I guess, in there, at least from the autism spectrum. I mean, this is news here, and it makes the world of autism, perhaps makes us look at it even in its greater entirety, in its fullness today.
Absolutely. This is very big news. If you go back to the mid-1940s, there were two doctors, Asperger's and another doctor in the U.S., and they both independently identified this group of unusual kids, Asperger's, the little professors, and with Leo Kanner, people with autism. And what's become clear is that they're actually the same group of people, that Asperger's is a part of autism. And I think this is a part of a really big shift that's happening, which is the recognition that there are large numbers of people with autism who have skills and sometimes spectacular skills. Asperger's is a part of that.
So we see this realm being publicly, formally kind of united here, and we see it as large. Give us a sense of the numbers. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about this, about the prevalence and incidence of autism among American children and how it appears either in fact or in diagnosis to have really grown in recent years. Where does our current understanding of that stand?
Yeah. Sure. So our best understanding right now is that roughly 1 in 100 people have an autism diagnosis. There's been a large increase in the number of people receiving an autism diagnosis. And I think the best understanding, if you look at the science, is it's basically a question of recognizing autism, that there isn't an epidemic
surge happening,
mm-hmm. a surge of people who are different. It's recognizing that people fall into this category. And the news of Asperger's being a part of the autism spectrum is just part of that process of coming to better understand autism, which itself is only a few decades old, that word.
But with that incidence, 1 in 100 or 1 in 88 was the number that we saw in 2008, lots of American families either have confronted this already or when they go to have children there, it's in the back of their minds that this could be something that they're looking at. And as those kids grow up, we get significant numbers and significant challenges of how they move into adulthood. What's the texture of their lives going to be like? How do they get some margin of independence? And to your story in the Times this weekend, how can they work?
This is a huge issue, and it's not just an issue in personal terms in terms of the people with autism, but also their families and extended families who worry about them. But it's also a national issue because, as you say, the number of people is so large that this is something that actually impacts the economy. And what I think is so important here and why I wrote this story is that what Torkel Sona has been able to do is to say these are people who in the past we've looked at as having disabilities, and they do have disabilities, but they also have abilities, and these are people who can contribute to the economy, who are not just going to be a drag on the economy, who can actually contribute to our national strength.
Torkel Sona, tell us how you've been pursuing this opportunity in Denmark and now in the United States. What kind of talents, character, capacity are you looking for in your operation among the population of people who have autism?
Yes, I started specialist on 9 years ago after learning about my son's disability, but more and more of the abilities he has.
Your son Lars, who has autism?
Yeah, he has a kind of childhood autism, not Asperger's, but childhood autism with a normal to high intelligence. And I could see that when he was in his comfort zone, he could do wonderful things, and he could be this skilled, caring, trustworthy, really bright person that you may want for any of your kids. But outside his comfort zone in the kindergarten, he was really, it was like a war zone for him. People wanting him to do things that he felt very difficult, like interacting in social games. So they saw another person than we did. And the idea of what will happen to Lars when we are not there to support him anymore, how would he have a good life? And he is such a wonderful person, and he has so many skills. So if he could get a job where he could be respected for his special personality and appreciated for his skills, then we would be happy when we retire one day. But I didn't see any indications of openings in the labor market. Actually, the labor market was going more and more into everyone have to excel in social skills. It's promoting yourself, being a good team worker, demonstrate empathy, managing stress, organizing your own time. And Lars, if he went to a job interview, he would never get to the part where he could tell about his wonderful skills. So we made a decision, my wife and I, that I should start as an entrepreneur, trying to set up a company where it's actually the terms of the people on the autistic spectrum that is kind of the rule in the company. And we want to build up their comfort zone. We want to use 5 months to assess, train them to find out what they are good at, what are their motivation, their workability, and what does it take for them to excel in the workplace. And we've used this structured mind, passion for detail, pride in what you do, perseverance in repetitive tasks to map these skills with the tasks that I knew of in my previous job as a technical director in an IT company, like software testing, quality control, data cleansing, data entries. There are so many tasks. I bet in any business area you'll find 5% of all tasks that would fit very well with our employees. So we created the concept 9 years ago, and what we're looking for is really a motivation to try to get on with your life, to make a career, not just a job, but think career. Find out what are realistic skill sets, what's the motivation, what's the workability, and many don't know because they know a lot of all the challenges because that has dominated their life. They've been, they may have been in settings where they've been yelled at or corrected all the time. And it takes time for them to find their comfort zone, to relax and to kind of open up to their kind of inner person.
Torkel, stand by for a moment. I want to look at how all that works. But Gareth, join us for a second here. You're describing this at some length to what Torkel's up to. Your headline is the autism advantage. You know, we think of it often in terms of burden, disadvantage, but you're looking at the advantageous side of this. So is Torkel. Give us a sense of the he's described some, but in your words, what are the advantages that you might find here?
Absolutely. What's crucial to understand about this is that Torkel is not running a charity. He's running a business, and he wants to convince employers that his employees are going to do the best job for the money. And what he's able to do is point to people that are able to do very difficult tasks that require enormous concentration and to do them extremely well.
Quality control, he says, software testing, data entry or cleansing.
Exactly. Just to give you one example of an employee I spent a fair amount of time with, there's a pharmaceutical company and they need to make sure that all of their data is absolutely correct. So they have someone go through and double check everything. And after a few hours, most people would get tired, but he's extraordinarily good at making sure that this data has all been entered correctly. And I spoke with his manager and she said, he's one of the best people I've ever seen do this job.
Is that related to his autism? To something about the characteristics of that mind?
It's intricately related with autism. With people with autism, it's very common to see attention to detail, an extraordinary attention to detail, an ability to just sustain concentration over hours and hours and to become very engaged in a task which other people might find repetitive.
That can be seen as an obsession or a downside, but you're saying hook it into the right task and it can be, as Torkel would say, even economically advantageous.
Exactly. The whole idea here is to flip disadvantages into advantages. So in the past, we viewed autism as a set of disabilities, for example, obsession with detail or rudeness. And what Torkel is saying, well, this is being careful. This is bluntness. This is honesty. So if you can just put these employees into a context where these strong abilities can shine, then you have a really good employee.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about putting people with autism to work, new thinking on the unique talents, characters that an exploding population could bring to the workforce. More and more kids are being diagnosed with autism. They're going to need jobs and lives. Torkel Sona is with us. He's CEO and founder of Specialist Sterne. It's a group out of Denmark, which has put folks with autism to work in jobs that suit their special characteristics, their mindset, the way their mind works. Gareth Cook has written it up for the New York Times Magazine. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, columnist for the Boston Globe, joins us in the studio. And he's a brother. His brother has autism, so he knows this world pretty well. You can join us at 800-423-8255. Just this last week in Washington, the House Oversight Committee held a hearing on the federal response to autism. Mark Blacksell of the nonprofit group Safe Minds testified there at the hearing about the scale of the challenge that American families in the whole country are facing with the prevalence of autism.
Autism is a public health crisis of historic proportions, worse than poliomyelitis. It's devastating a generation of children and their families. We need to face that reality. Autism is a national emergency.
A national emergency. Torkel Sona's work may be one of the pieces. We'll hear about others that get pulled in to deal with this. Torkel, of people who are on the spectrum, who you work with or you test or review to see if they might work out for your program, what percentage are able to do the kind of work that you're hooking them up with, that you're offering?
Well, I think that we're addressing the high-functioning part of the autistic spectrum. And we have a kind of a rule of thumb expectation of 5% of the population may be readily employable after assessment training at the specialist. But actually, the people that we are addressing is a group where, for many, I think it's really the settings that disable people. These people in the right settings can also contribute to another crisis that's in Europe and in the U.S., and that's the lack of skilled people within IT, within science, technology, engineering, math. And this is an area there where we can bring in a lot of people, and we can help the corporate sector to get the most out of these potential resources. We are a case study at Harvard Business School not because we do software testing, but because we manage what they call the outliers, those at the edges or outside mainstream, where Harvard Business School claims that a lot of the innovation will come from, and that the leading companies in a knowledge-based market economy will be the ones who are best at managing the outliers. And we have big ambitions, and that's because what we're doing right now is to generate knowledge that we want to transform into a management and mentorship model that will enable the big companies to use our knowledge and expand their recruitment also to cover what we call specialist people.
Gareth, I wonder how you see that playing into companies' challenges. How do these strengths get brought in and really deployed? You know, you clearly have to be careful here that not to think of autistic people, people with autism, as all Rain Man kind of magical. On the other hand, their minds can work in ways that can be extraordinary. So what's the, is there a, I don't know what the right word is, sweet spot comes to mind, but what's the range in which, you know, some people are debilitated by this. Others are very high functioning.
There's a huge,
and here's the economy on the other side with special needs of its own, as Torkel says. Where do they most optimally intersect?
Absolutely. There's a huge range of how of people with autism, what sort of abilities and disabilities they have. And I think it's a danger to think of autism just as a profound disability. There are people who are profoundly disabled, but even the kind of language we saw in that congressional testimony of there being a national crisis, I think is a little bit misleading, not because this isn't a huge issue, but because we're talking about a wide range of people, some of whom have devastating disabilities, but also others who have amazing abilities. To put this into a broader context.
So you're saying sort of normalize our thinking about
sort of
it.
Normalize it. This is a group of people who are very diverse in their interests, very diverse in their abilities. Some people are interested in art. Some people are interested in piano. Others are interested in IT work. Some have areas of extraordinary intelligence, and others have areas of huge social challenge and maybe even unable to speak. And it's a mistake to sort of paint all these people as one group of people. We're talking about 3 million people. But the second thing that I think is crucial to understand is that there's a broader context here, which is the process of capitalism is to move towards increasing specialization. We've seen that since the 16th century as capitalism has developed. And what that means is that as capitalism develops, individual workers don't have to have as broad a range of skills. So, for example, Bill Gates may not have been a especially good hunter-gatherer. He may not have been especially skilled at gathering nuts and berries.
Or salesman,
but he does have this set of abilities, and he's done extremely well. And you see that same thing happening throughout the economy, where people have a few particular skills, are able to do very well for themselves, even if they have other areas of weakness.
What about the social problems that can come with this that may make companies reluctant or feel that they're not capable or knowledgeable enough to know how to integrate or work with that special profile?
Exactly. So these social problems can be very real, and it can make communication difficult. But there's also this assumption that a lot of people bring to this, which is that we're very prone to judge people by their social ability. So if they're not very articulate, we assume that they're not very intelligent. And even within the scientific community, it's only been in the last decade or so that in the area of autism, researchers themselves have begun to realize that there are people who don't have very good communication skills but are extremely high in intelligence. Let me just give you one example. There is a study that came out just a few years ago where they use a standard IQ test called the Wechsler, and they gave it to just a group of kids with autism. None of these kids scored in the high intelligence range. But then when they switched to a different highly respected IQ test that doesn't lean on sort of people's verbal ability, a full third of them scored in the high intelligence range. And the autism research community in the past has used the first test. And so we've sort of assumed that people with autism tend to not be very intelligent. And it's only recently that we've been able to get around this barrier, get around this assumption that social ability is the same as intelligence.
Let me ask about another presumption that might be out there then. People may wonder, well, do autistic people really want to work?
Absolutely. And I think that autistic people and all of us derive enormous psychological benefit from working and just feeling useful, feeling a part of something. With autism, it's especially difficult because a lot of people with autism are socially awkward, and we therefore assume that they're not interested in being with other people. But that's just simply incorrect. I've seen sort of firsthand the transformative power of this work. One of these people I spent time with, Christian Anderson, he was bullied since the third or fourth grade. Mm-hmm. He went through school. He couldn't get a job. He was depressed, almost suicidal. And now he's this valued member of a pharmaceutical company, and he just beams when he describes his work.
Gareth Cook, Torkel Sona with Specialist Sterna. Please stand by. We've got callers here. I want to bring in Chris in Portsmouth, Virginia. Chris, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I'll be very brief. I just wanted to comment that I was diagnosed later in life with Asperger's, and so by this point I'm pretty much centered in this career that I have, which is this sort of sales customer service position, and it's difficult to say the least. I would, just hearing them talk about these other career options, I'm very interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of advice can you give? Where should I go? Who should I talk to, et cetera? And I'll take my, the response off here.
Chris, thank you very much for calling. Asperger's, a young man is not real comfortable in that sales job, but how does he figure out this realm of possibility?
Well, there's two things to say here. First of all, his story is a very common story. Asperger's and autism in general has not been well understood until fairly recently. Asperger's itself is a very recent diagnosis. So it's very common for people to be diagnosed later in life. One thing that has been a tremendous development is there are a lot of people out there who work as sort of job coaches, especially in Asperger's. There's a very good Asperger's association in New England, which helps with just this kind of thing, taking people like this and connecting them with people who can help them find new careers.
So if you're somebody like our caller, where do you turn? He's in Virginia.
Right.
I mean, is there a way to figure this out? Is there somebody who can help? Is there a literature you could tap into?
There's one woman I spoke with. Her name is Barbara Bissonette, and she works in Massachusetts, but I'm sure that she could help him find advice. She's written a book for people with Asperger's trying to find employment.
Let's go to Pat in Las Casas, Tennessee. Pat, you're on the air.
Yes. Somehow I'm breaking up. But my son is mildly Asperger's.
Uh-huh.
And but he works for AT&T. We knew from a very young age that he was different,
mm-hmm.
and I can really relate to a lot of the things the guest was speaking of, because he was bullied in grammar school, and every now and then there's adults who just don't get him because he's 40 years old. He still lags socially somewhat,
mm-hmm.
but not seriously.
Right.
But he is he's such a good person, and he is very intelligent. And when I heard the description one day on TV, what mm-hmm. Asperger's was, I just stood there with my mouth open, and I said, that's my son. And he finally got diagnosed several years ago, but he functions on a very high level. He loves electronics. Without any tutors, he has passed the Cisco certification, took that in, I think, a couple or three different tests and passed them all with very good scores. And I just couldn't be prouder of him. And I think about some youngsters out there, and I think I wouldn't have their son. I love mine. He is so dear and so precious.
Pat, I love it, and I'm so glad that he got plugged in a way that's really working out for him with a tech job that seems to fit. I mean, Gareth, you're nodding as you listen to this.
Yeah, it's a very common story to hear of people who found their way into the tech community, and one of the things that's been happening is as our economy creates more of these types of jobs, there's more places for people like this. One other thing I just wanted to pick up on what she said is she talked about her son as a good kid, and that's not just a sort of proud mother speaking. One of the things you see in this group of people is not just these areas of intelligence, but also these ethical qualities. These are workers who are very diligent, incredibly honest, and also very loyal. And as companies have started to work with employees who are autistic, they're starting to recognize that these other qualities are also important and an important part of the employment equation.
I want to bring Leslie Long into our conversation. She joins us from Princeton, New Jersey. She's Director of Adult Services at Autism Speaks. It's an advocacy group. Leslie Long, thank you very much for being with us today.
thanks for having me. Hi, Tom.
Hi. So what's the scale of the challenge here? Torkel's looking at maybe 5% of those that he looks at with autism who work out for the program he's bringing to the U.S. now from Denmark. What about the employment picture nationally for people on the autism spectrum in the United States, Leslie?
So we know that in the U.S., the unemployment rate for people with developmental disabilities, which includes autism, their participation rate in the workforce is under 78%, according to the Department of Labor. So we know we have a huge problem in that we're not employing people with developmental disabilities across the country. If you talk to families of people on the autism spectrum, as Gareth noted, you find that employment is even tougher for people on the spectrum. So we know the numbers are higher that are not engaging in the workforce. But the great thing about the United States is that we have an entitlement system that people can be educated in school up until age 21. If they have a developmental disability, such as autism. So we have a unique ability to really work with students while they're still in school and learn about what their functional workplace skills are, find out what their strengths are prior to them aging out of the school system and looking for work.
What percentage of people on the autism spectrum do you see as employable? Is it 50, 90, 100? How do you look at it?
I think everybody has a skill set and unique ability to add to the workforce. And so I've been working with people for over 25 years in supported employment, and I've seen every level of skill and ability. So I put the number as high as 90% because there are always a certain percentage of people that whether they are medically challenged or behaviorally challenged that may not be interested in the workforce. But I think everybody has a unique ability, and everybody, as Gareth mentioned, has a way of looking at the workforce that defines their self-esteem, their empowerment. So I would hate to exclude anybody from wanting to work in competitive employment.
Gareth, what's realistic here? I mean, Torkel says 5% come make his screen. You know, Leslie says, well, maybe 90% could have a job. How do you look at it?
I think that the true number is somewhere in between those two figures. I think that part of what Torkel is saying is that he's looking for people with abilities, but there's also this other aspect, which is that for his company, for his business model, people have to be interested in doing IT work, the kind of work that, mm-hmm. that he finds employment for. And it's very possible that others seeing the same model will conclude that they can find other areas of work. And so people who have ability but are interested in other areas can also do this. The other question that's the broader question here is how many of these people can we put to work? And I think that the honest answer is we just don't know. And the reason is because it's only recently that we've begun to look at this entire population and say, not what are their disabilities, but what are their abilities and how using management, using other innovative techniques, can we tap into those particular abilities? And we just don't have a good sense for what all those abilities and strengths are out there.
Leslie, what kind of receptivity do you see among employers? I mean, what portion are open to taking the steps that may be required to tap the special talents that are here?
Well, I think that's a great question. And we at Autism Speaks recently had a employment think tank, and Torkel was part of that think tank. And what we heard from employers is they're very interested. They know they have baby boomers retiring from the workforce. We need to begin to add employees to the workforce. We know there's going to be a huge gap. And so they want to tap into the abilities of unique individuals, but they don't know how to reach them. And we heard the same thing from people on the autism spectrum and their families saying, we don't know how to reach employers. So I think the receptivity is there. And
we're looking to open up that picture right here today. Leslie Lung with Autism Speaks, thanks for joining us for a couple of minutes. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about putting people with autism to work, new thinking on the unique talents that an exploding population of people being diagnosed with autism could bring to the workforce. More and more kids classified this way, they're going to need jobs. My guest Torkel Sona says they bring unique talents that employers could really tap to their benefit. He's bringing that from Denmark to the United States with his company Specialisterna that he's is getting a lot of attention these days. Gareth Cook wrote it up in some detail in a big piece called The Autism Advantage, in a big piece in the New York Times Magazine. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. There's also video there of a really interesting young woman, Carly Fleischman, who I spoke with a couple of months ago at the Nantucket Project, a kind of a conference of thought leaders, 17 years old, communicates through a computer, but just as smart as can be. She took on U.S. Senator John Kerry, you'll see, in this setting, in a very interesting way. Quite a mind, but expressed in a different way. Randy Lewis joins us right now from Deerfield, Illinois. He's well known for his work on this very front. He's Senior Vice President of Distribution and Logistics with Walgreens. Walgreens employs 240,000 people, operates more than 8,000 drugstores in America. Randy has a son on the spectrum of autism. He's opened two distribution facilities, one in South Carolina, one in Connecticut, where 40% of the workforce have physical or cognitive disabilities. Randy Lewis, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi. What did your son teach you about this?
Well, he's taught me lots of things, but one thing is to look past the obvious to see a complete person that with lots of different talents and to try to figure them out and an infinite amount of patience in trying to get it out.
Has it been economical for Walgreens to build distribution centers who have these folks right at the heart of their operations?
Well, most certainly. I mean, we like to say we're not a charity, we're a business. So, and our customers demand that high service at low cost. So we started out with saying we're not going to lower any standards. We're going to pay the same for everybody in a completely inclusive environment, and it's paid off.
And what kind of accommodations have you made to let people with autism and others come in and productively contribute to your operation?
Well, in our centers now across all 20 centers, we have about 1,000 people with disabilities. Probably 15 to 20% of those have autism. And our average accommodation across the board has probably been less than $25, and it's mostly paper and pencil.
Now, meaning what? These are special steps you've needed to take to get them in the groove to do their work? Or what is the what kind of accommodation do you mean there, Randy?
Well, for example, a pen and paper, maybe a piece of paper with the number with a box drawn for all the number of boxes we expect them to be able to process in an hour or a 10-minute time. Something as simple as that as a reminder. In one distribution center, we had a picture of Barack Obama telling the person to get back from break on time, just to remind him.
Right. I think people have a sense of disability in their mind, but they may be less quick to see the strengths or attributes that, let's say, folks with autism could bring to the job if it works for them. How would you describe those strengths, Randy?
Well, I think in the autism community, and you talked a little earlier, there's a saying, once you've seen one person with autism, you've seen one person with autism. But there are some commonalities. I think focus is what we see a lot of. We see devotion. You asked the question, do people with autism want to work? My son works 3 days in a Walgreens store, and he has two things written on his calendar, payday and payday. Yes, sir.
And for him, so there's a paycheck that's involved here. What about the satisfaction of the work environment? Part of that we think of as social, but that may not be the biggest payoff if you've got autism.
Well, and we see it across the board. A lot of people do have high social needs, even though they're expressed in different ways. And making assumptions about that, we've been surprised over and over again.
Gareth, Kathy writes to us online. She's got a 23-year-old son. He says, trust me when I tell you, putting them, young people like him in social situations does not get them socialized, she says. I live with this daily. The way my son thinks is very different from what he was taught and what his peers think or do. What about this in a workplace environment, Gareth?
Well, just it really depends. There's two separate things you see happening. One, there's a certain amount of accommodation we have to make to people with autism to just understand how they're going to think and what's going to make them comfortable. The other thing that I've seen with my own brother and I've seen with a lot of people who work is at the beginning, they're very stressed out. People with autism it's very easy for them to become very stressed out because they don't understand social expectations. But as they become more comfortable and it's more clear exactly what's expected to them, you see them open up. You see them be more social. And they are interested in other people. They just approach it in a different way.
Randy Lewis, you've got a personal stake in this because of your son. When you look across your company and other companies, do you see a willingness? Is it clear enough how to make this work that others within your company and even competitors can look at this and say, oh, we need to be doing that too, or not?
Well, we've certainly embraced it across the company. And we've done it in our distribution centers, and we're getting ready to do it in our stores. We've kind of thrown open our doors to other companies to come in, and they've gone in a big way at this, like Best Buy, Lowe's, Procter & Gamble. And I think the opportunities in the coming years can be much better. The biggest impediment to that, what we've seen, is fear.
Fear of, will we know how to make this work well?
Exactly. And what we found out is that you don't have to have all the answers. We're typically able people. We make mistakes and we move on. We learn. And we've sort of taken that attitude, and that's what's gotten us as far as we've gotten so far. We haven't done everything right, but we've learned from it and use that mistake to make a difference the next time.
Randy Lewis with Walgreens, who's doing this in a big way, joining us today from Deerfield, Illinois. Mr. Lewis, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Let's go to Idaho Falls, Idaho. Melanie is calling. Melanie, thanks. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a 20-year-old son who was formally diagnosed with Asperger's at age 12. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to say he's at college. He's actually living away from home. And we felt that was huge progress for him to live in a dorm, to live with people that he didn't know. And he actually did very, very well socially his freshman year. But academically, he's kind of been suffering. And the first year, he didn't want to admit his disability and so didn't register with the University Accessibility Center.
Yeah.
At the end of the year, we looked at his grades. They weren't so hot. We said, probably need some accommodations here. You probably need to tell people. You need to tell your professors, you know, some of the needs that you have, special needs that you have. So we had him retested. They confirmed his diagnosis. And so, you know, he's started the semester of his sophomore year, the first semester of his sophomore year. And he's, again, not doing so well. And my husband and I were saying, you know, maybe at, you know, Christmas, at the semester break, we need to reevaluate if he should be going back, because academically his grades are probably about a 2.0, and he's really underachieving when he is so intelligent.
So what do you think when you look forward to a work life for your son, Melanie?
Yeah, that's where we're stuck. I mean, he seems to really like liberal arts. He loves he loves to write. He does love technology too. He loves to play games more, but he took a computer science class and that was too difficult and too abstract for him. But he sees kind of poli-sci, history, English as dead ends for him because it seems to him like it's only teaching. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, if it's from your guess, if it's a good idea to give him a break from school a little bit and have him kind of figure out what he really wants. I think he's looking at school as sort of another thing to check off his list, you
right.
know, and to be normal. Because that's what his peers are doing, and
right.
it's really important for him to be normal.
Right.
But he's underachieving, and you know, and there's so much emphasis on credentials and on
right.
degrees.
You know, Melanie, I'm thinking, as you describe your son's situation, how many even kids without that special aspect to their lives have some of these same questions about what's this degree going to do for me? Is it getting me on the right path to a job? But there he is with another set of challenges as well. Gareth, what are you thinking as you hear this story? Is it important in what you're seeing in the employment paths that may be opening up here to complete the credentialing of a young person? Or is it not so important in this special category?
Well, hearing the story, as you say, the first thing that struck me is how common this conversation is, not just with people with Asperger's, but any parent with a kid trying to figure out what it is that they're interested in, what it is that they want to do with their life. I think this also underscores the fact that people with Asperger's have all kinds of different talents and interests and abilities. And I think it sounds to me like what needs to happen here is he needs to figure out what it is he really enjoys doing, what it is that really makes him happy to be doing. And I'm a believer, and I say this to anyone who has a kid going to college, in finding out what it is their real passion is and support them in following that passion.
Let me get a call from Carlisle, Massachusetts. Nancy is on the line. Nancy, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to start by saying thank you so much for identifying this need and doing something about it. So clearly useful. And I was wondering, and I can take my answer off the air, if you are actually kind of identifying jobs that children or adults, I guess, with autism or Asperger's disorder would be good at if they were adjusted in some way. And I think Temple Grandin in one of her books brought out something like they would be great at finding things in airline security on the televisions if they could be removed from the hubbub of the lines or something. So that's what I mean, like adjusting the actual job so that they could actually do it in an effective way, maybe even more effectively than a typical.
It's a great observation question, Nancy. Let us pick it up. Thorkil Sona, how about it? Are you asking employers to restructure particular jobs so that those with autism that you may bring to them can do them effectively? Or do you ask, you know, your consultants, as you call them, with autism to adapt to the job? Which way does it go?
Well, we do some mapping together with the corporate partner on what are the needs in the company and how could that potential match with the skill sets that we know of. And what kind of accommodation can they provide compared with what is needed? We ask our corporate partner to, when we engage with them, to be able to describe the task, to plan the tasks, to make sure that the work setting is comfortable, mm-hmm. and be very open and frank and say what you mean what you say. Set the expectations very clearly. Don't use irony. Don't use sarcasm when our mm-hmm. people are around. And the biggest commitment we ask for is do not stress our consultants. If you want things done differently, faster, whatever, go to our managers and we'll deal with it. We get a lot of feedback that they've learned about good management and find out that their own staff actually also appreciate this kind of management.
The straightforward, irony, no sarcasm. Yeah. Can and work all what, over it.
And what we, I think what is different here is we tell our corporate partners that this is not just about fitting our consultants into your workplace. It's mm-hmm. also to accommodate your workplace to fit with our individual. Mm-hmm. Because that's kind of the price to get the maximum value out of the work that our consultants will do. And I think this is our ambition is to enable 100,000 jobs in the U.S. It's only 5% of everyone on the spectrum. But more importantly, it is to demonstrate to everyone what can happen if you provide the understanding and accommodation and respect that make the individual thrive. And I don't see any limits to what kind of business areas we can bring into place. Mm. Pattern recognition skills are needed all over. People who love working with details are all over. There are some with musical skills, with visual skills, arts. For me, it's a matter of helping the individual to express themselves. And some are through a meaningful and productive job. Some are autistic. Some are music-wise.
Thorkil, what about our caller Melanie from Idaho Falls wondering about her child and education and whether it's important to stay on that beam or what have you found? Is that an important piece of helping the people on the spectrum that you've worked with find good employment, or is there something else that may be more important than education?
Well, when we take people in, we are, of course, interested in their record on what kind of educations they've been taking. But mm-hmm. it's not an obligation that you have to have this grade in this kind of direction, this program, because we know that if there are dropouts, and many are, it may be because they've been too intelligent for their teachers and have been kind of challenging that how it may have been felt by the teacher. There can be so many reasons why you haven't gotten a good grade in IT education, for example. And for us, the most important thing is the motivation, the skills that we can help with, and also the workability.
I've just got a minute here. I want to go to Gareth, and we want to be also clear-eyed about this. We've got listeners saying, "Hey, come on, you know, this is great, but this is a Yankee girl, right?" So she said, "This is a national health crisis." She says, "My son is almost 9, very academically delayed. Many of our kids will never be able to work or do low-level work. Many of our kids are nonverbal." She says, "Take your blinders off." What do you say to that, Gareth?
Well, I think people have very strong feelings about this, and I'm very familiar with this. I think that there is a substantial group of people with autism who have profound disabilities, and there's large numbers of people with autism who are never going to have a job of the kind that we're talking about here. But I also think it's a mistake to go too far in the other direction and assume that everyone with autism is incapable of doing this kind of work. And I think the truth, as we learn more about this, will fall somewhere in between the two.
Dealing with difference is right in here. It's complicated. It's not easy. Some of the challenges are very large. Some may be insurmountable. But if we just open to the difference, it may be more surmountable than we thought. Torkel Sona, we wish you good luck with your work in the U.S. with Specialist Sterna. Thanks for joining us from Philadelphia today. That 100,000 jobs sounds great. Good luck in finding those. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
And Gareth Cook, thanks so much for your piece.
Thanks so much, Tom. I appreciate it.
Listeners, you can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Join us tomorrow. The great historian Kevin Phillips will be with us. We're talking about the American Revolution, politics then and now from 1775. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.